Hello, welcome to Democracy in Action, and this is me, Gabriel Shadar. مرحبا بكم في برنامج Democracy in Action, وده معكم أنا Gabriel Shadar على راديو ميرايا. Today we are going to discuss on the role of the MPs, that is the members of parliament, in enacting and debating proposed legislation. And also speaking to members of parliament today, we will try to find answers to some of the basic questions like what is the parliament's responsibility to ensure that the laws of the land are being executed, and also what does the parliamentary oversight entail in monitoring and the actions and activities of the executive branch of the government to ensure transparency and accountability. And the MPs also will speak about their responsibility to ensure that legislations passed by Parliament are implemented as intended. لنا مستمعين الكرام في برنامج Democracy in Action. نحن هنتكلم مع أعضاء من البرلمان وفي موضوع بيتعلق في إنه كيف يكون عندهم دور, كيف دورهم شنو في إنهم يفعلوا القوانين والتشريعات المقترحة. وكمان أعضاء البرلمان معي في الاستوديو الليلة حيتكلموا أو حيجيبوا عن أسئلة أساسية زي السؤال بيتعلق بواجباتهم ومسؤولياتهم في تأكيد إنه القوانين والتشريعات اللي بيمرروها حتكون منفذة, هيتم تنفيذها. وكمان أعضاء البرلمان حيتكلموا عن دورهم في الرقابة, دورهم الرقابي ومتابعة أعمال وأنشطة الجهاز التنفيذي في الحكومة, بالذات في مسألة الشفافية والمحاسبية. الأعضاء البرلمان معي في الاستوديو كمان حيتكلموا عن دورهم ومسؤوليتهم في تأكيد إنه القوانين دي اللي جازوها دي بيجيزوها كمان بتنفذ كما هي, كما القرض منها. معي في الاستوديو Honorable George Andrea Juma, the Deputy Chair of the Standing Committee of Legislation and Justice. Welcome, Honorable George Andrea Juma.
Thank you very much. I'm profoundly honored to be one of your guests this morning. On your show, Democracy in Action. Also, I would like also through you to greet all the listeners of Radio Miraya, wherever they are.
Thank you. Welcome also, Honorable Gatwich Lampoch, and also MP in the Parliament.
Thank you, Gabriel, for having me.
Yes, and with me in the studio also is my colleague from the UNMIS, Political Affairs, Emmanuel Rathschild, Political Affairs Officer with UNMIS. Welcome, Emmanuel.
Thank you, Gabriel, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, they might be wondering why you are here, but you are a partner. UN is a partner, and you will speak about how the UNMIS and the UN is trying to help the MPs in different ways. Thanks for coming to this show.
Absolutely.
Yes, let me come to my first question to the MPs. And Honorable George Andrea Juma, we might even speak later in Arabic for some time before, because of the listeners to understand. The MPs have roles and responsibilities, and in terms of the governance in the country. But there might be some things that are clear or some things that are not clear, so we need to go back to the basics about the roles and responsibilities of the MPs. And this is an opportunity to tell the listeners, the man on the street, what are these roles, basically?
Hey, once again, thank you very much. Of course, the National Parliament it has a competency, that is the national competency. And the National Parliament is mostly responsible of passing the budget in the House, and also ratifying treaties, agreements and conventions. And also the National Parliament also is, one of his competencies also is to discuss the reports and the policies of the ministries. And in passing the budget, of course, there are challenges sometimes. The members of parliament, when they're discussing the budget, so we have to call all the the ministries which is related to the standing specialized committees, and then we share with them, and then we discuss with them their budgets, and we see what are the challenges that is facing them, and so that also we can solve these problems with them. Also, the National Parliament, one of their competencies also is to look, you know, at the needs of the people, you see, and also to debate and to discuss the laws.
Thanks. Let me go also to Honorable Gatwich Lampoch.
Thank you very much, Gabriel, for having us here. And I think this is an opportunity for us to educate our audience and the public about the role of the parliament. As you have already mentioned, let me start by defining the parliament itself. Parliament is a French word which has two components, parler. Parler is means talk. So ment means wisdom. So that means when you are in a parliament, you talk with the wisdoms. Talk with wisdoms. For us as South Sudanese, South Sudan has a bicameral system of government, of parliament. Bicameral, that means we have two houses. We have the National Legislative Assembly, and we have the Council of State. These two houses represent the national legislature, and they have their own roles that they play together as a national legislature. So Parliament is a democratic institution where also members express their own views. So our main role as a national legislature, that means combine the two houses together, is to represent the will of the people of South Sudan. That's one. Number two, we have to foster the unity of the people of South Sudan. Number three is that we have to enact laws. That means we legislate laws. Number four, we oversight the government. That means we have to oversee the executive and also the judiciary of how they implement legislations and policies that are implemented. These are the major competence of the national legislature. And also, in addition to this, as two houses, when as a national legislature, we have also a common competence that we do together. One, we amend the constitution. Number two, we also legislate laws that are serving the interests of the country, as it has been already. There are some treaties and also conventions, and also there are agreements, international agreements. Mm-hmm. And also we discuss the budget. And also we discuss the president, the state of the State of Nation address. And now we are expecting the parliament to be opened by the president. The president will issue a State of Nation address. That is called SONA. That SONA is the president will come and present the government policy. What services that are going to deliver to the people of South Sudan. Also, it's a national legislature address that issue. Also, we can come together as a parliament to discuss the budget. We can come together and also declare war if our country is under threat. And also, we can come also declare a state of emergency if the country is also facing a lot of challenges. So these are the common or the general functions or competence of the national legislature. But we have our own specific functions. The national legislature, National Legislative Assembly has its own, and the Council of State address
has its own,
that is, address the interests of the state.
Thank you for that elaborate explanation. في البرنامج بتاع ديموكراسي ان اكشن قاعدين نتكلم في دور البرلمان في الحكومة القومية والاثنين اونربل جورج اندريا وونربل جاتويك لام وضحوا لنا انه البرلمان بيشتغل اساسا في اجازة الميزانيات والنظر في احتياجات الشعب واجازة القوانين المختلفة. وعندنا كمان نوعين من البرلمان مقسم لمجلس ولايات ومجلس تشريعي والاثنين عندهم ادوار مختلفة لكن عندهم ادوار متكاملة مثلا اجازة القانون تمثيل الشعب وتوحيد الشعب وكمان عندهم يعني حاجات مشتركة بتعلق بتعديل الدستور وتعديل القوانين ومثلا اعلان حالة الطوارئ واعلان الحرب. وطبعا جاتويج وضح لنا اصل الكلمة هي كلمة فرنسية كلمة برلمان وبيقول انه يعني الكلام بحكمة وهذا كلام مهم جدا انه البرلمانيين بيمثلوا الحكمة بتاعت الشعب وطبعا مختارين من الشعب عشان يمثلوا الشعب في كثير من القضايا اللي بيتكلموا فيها. اذا الناس عايزين يعلقوا بعدين على الكلام او عايزين يسألوا استفسارات لانه ده برنامج تنويري برنامج تثقيفي وممكن يرسلوا على 0912177141. If you want to ask more clarification questions to clarify some of the points you can send an SMS to 0912177141 and later we will have the chance from the listeners to call on 0929686297. The number again is 0929686297 for your interaction later. Let me go back now to my guests in the studio, Honorable George Andrea Juma and Honorable Gatwich Lam. What happens when a draft bill, as you said, you will be passing laws, you are passing laws and or policies, what happens when the draft bill is brought to your consideration as national MPs, Honorable George?
Thank you very much. When the bill is presented to the House, it's presented either by the Minister of Justice, and the presentation of the bill is in the beginning is we call it the phase stage of the presentation, and from there then the bill is given to the Standing Specialized Committee. Mm-hmm. And then the members of the Standing Specialized Committee that are the one to discuss the bill, and then they come with their reports for the second reading. And most of the time in the second reading is all about the general features of the bill. So the members will discuss the bill, and then also to contribute with their opinions and their ideas in the bill. And that is actually to reach the bill. So at the second reading, then the bill is presented to the House for debate. And when the members are debating or are discussing the bill at the second reading, it's actually they're discussing the general features of the bill. So they always look at the generality of the bill. You don't go into the details of the bill because there is another stage in which the members can discuss the bill in length. So now the report, when it is discussed, then the members will make their report for the third reading. And in the third reading, this is where by all the members of the parliament, they will contribute with their opinions, and then they will discuss the bill. And also they make some changes, because the changes always takes place when it is in the third reading. They make amendments, and also after they make the amendments, also they can even change some of the things which is in the bill. So from there, and then the bill is taken back to the committee for the last stage, that is the fourth stage. And in that stage, always there is no any amendment. It is going to be passed stage by stage. So this is how members of parliament always discuss the bills which is presented to them by the Minister of Justice. For the policies, because sometimes also the ministers, they present their policies. Actually, the policies, these are the activities of the ministries. And any minister is supposed to present their policies and programs to the parliament so that the parliament can discuss them and then can approve them. It's not all the ministries. Now, since we have started, not all the ministers have presented their policies. Very few ministers are the ones who have presented their policies, and we appreciate that. But presentation of the policies to the parliament is very important. And why do I say it's important? Because this is in which the members of parliament will know exactly what the ministers are doing. They will see their programs, and at the same time also, they can also contribute with their opinions and ideas to enrich that plans and programs of the ministries. So in general, this is actually how we as members of parliament, when the bills are presented to us, we discuss it, and these are the stages. And also when the policies is presented to the parliament, also this is the way how we pass the policies. So when the policies are already given to the committee, that is the appropriate committee or the standing specialized committee, they have to make their reports and then they present it to the House. And after that, the House will debate it and will discuss it. Mm-hmm. And from there, they will pass it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable George Andrea. Honorable Gatwick Lam.
I think let me add something. I think Honorable George has already addressed the whole issue, the stages of the presentation of the bills. That is four stages. But I want to, because we said we are national legislation, mm-hmm. and there are bills that also affect the interests of the states. Mm-hmm. So this, let me address this issue and clarify it. If it happened that any bills presented to the National Assembly and passed by the National Assembly, and at the end we felt that the bill affect the interests of the states, then what happened here is there's an they will form what they call inter-house committee. That inter-house committee will scrutinize the bill that passed by the National Assembly and see whether there is issue affecting the interest of the state. If they felt that the bill affect the interest of the state, then it will be referred to the Council mm-hmm. of the States. Then the Council of the State will go now and scrutinize the bill. And then if they can make even some change. Mm-hmm. And then when they make that change, also they can be considered. And that we can be considered, and then the bill will be considered that the bill is passed. So this is when it comes to the issues of the bill that are interrelated to the two houses. So this is what is happening. Now, with issue of the bills that passed by the National Assembly, and how the executive will implement them. You know, the parliament now has introduced another committee. That is, what do they call, the governance insurance committee. This governance committee, this standing specialized committee, I think is meant to follow up the implementation of the legislation that passed by the National Assembly and the Council of State, so whether they are implemented or not. So they have to follow up and summon the ministers that if a certain bill is passed, then you will see whether that bill has been implemented or not. For example, the financial bill. They also, together with the Committee of Finance, they can summon the Minister of Finance whether they implement the appropriation bills or not. So this is how the Parliament works. So we follow up. We follow up and also try to oversee the executive whether mm-hmm. they're implementing policies or they are not implementing. Mm-hmm. So this is the roles of the Parliament when the bill is presented to the House.
Let me elaborate a little bit on the issue of when the bill has something to do with the Council of States.
Yeah.
The practice that we have in Sudan, usually, when there is a bill which has something to do with the states, what is happening is we don't have inter-house committee. In Sudan, when we were there, we used to have, the Speaker of the Council of States and then the Speaker of National Legislative Assembly. Both of them, they will sit and then they will discuss. And then they will the Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly will listen to the opinions of the Speaker of the Council of States mm-hmm. on matters that has something to do with the state. But the practice that we have here now, we have already created even a committee. There mm-hmm. is a committee, a legal committee, for the two houses. Mm-hmm. And you see the rationale with the practice that we have for the legislature, the practice that we have in Sudan, the rationale is you don't need to have committees in place because, first of all, we will not have members for these committees. All the members, they are either in the two houses, either the National Legislative Assembly or the Council of States. Then what is the reason of having a committee in which you don't have members? Because mostly the committees, they operate when they have members, and then they have meeting and so on. But I think we have a different, practice, and maybe we have already taken it from the region. Mm. But sometimes also there is one thing that I would like also to clarify. You know, there are bills, or sometimes even in agreement, you know, there are certain things that we're supposed to do as legislation, but this bill, you will find that the Constitution, it says something, and then the agreement, it says something. Mm. Then most of the powers, you find the National Legislative Assembly is the one to pass maybe that bill. Mm. But when you read also in the Constitution, it may say the both houses. Mm. So we have a contradictions in sometimes in the interpretation of the Constitution and then the one of the agreement. But we know all of us that what comes in the agreement always prevails over mm-hmm. what is in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank mm-hmm. you.
The question also that comes to my mind is whether you are following some rules. There are rules that are set for this. You are not waking up in the morning and say, how are we going to approach this? So what are the guides and the rules that you follow?
Yeah, of course, we have rules. That is the conduct of business. Mm-hmm. In other jurisdictions, they call it the rule of procedures. But for us here in Sudan, with South Sudan, we say conduct of business. Actually, the conduct of business is the one to guide the debates in the House. And also, at the same time, also, it gives rights to all the members, you see. And also, it gives powers to the speaker in order to control and to direct and to guide mm-hmm. the House when they're debating. Mm. So for you, when you are speaking in the Parliament, I mean, when you want to get up, of course, you have to mention your name and then the political parties that you belong to, and also at the same time your seat, you see. And then also you quote, you know, from the conduct of business. Mm. Of course, these are the most important procedure. We always consider as members of Parliament that the conduct of business is just like a Bible for us, or Quran.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have to move all the times with it, because it is the one that guides you. Mm. If there are anything that you want to raise, you have also to quote, or you have also to cite what is written in the conduct of business. Mm. Mm. So, Gabriel Shadar, our law or our Bible and Quran is the conduct of business.
Yeah. When we were actually introducing the new members to the Parliament,
yes.
We tell them that now in your house you have your own Bible or Quran that you set next to you.
Uh-huh.
But also when you come to the Parliament, the second Bible that you are going to apply will be the Constitution and the conduct of business. Yeah. These are the law that each member of the Parliament should have them next to him
mm-hmm.
or next to her.
No.
Because these are the things that are guiding them. In addition to what he has said about mm-hmm. this issue of the Inter-House Committee, yes, in Sudan they may be different, but what we are doing because our conduct of business, we are taking it from the regions and mm-hmm. other countries,
yeah.
and we are sharing experiences of other countries. In some countries, when there's a bill that is affecting the interests of the state or other houses, what they have, they have a committee called a mediation committee that will come and sit and then mediate, which we call here in our constitution and the conduct of business, we call it the inter-house committee.
Mm.
So this is what we do here in South Sudan. They call it mediate. Now we have even two conduct of business.
Mm.
Now we have a joint conduct of business that will bring the two houses together.
Mm.
So when we sit as a two houses, we have a conduct of business regulation that regulated the national legislature. It's called conduct of business for national legislation.
Mm.
That is when you raise up as well. You have to quote a regulation from that particular one. Mm. You don't quote from the National Assembly or Council of State, because sometimes if you have a speaker who is familiar with the conduct of business, we said, okay, whenever you quote it, any regulation, you will come and he will refer to the conduct of business.
Mm-hmm.
When you felt that, I don't know, you are quoting the wrong regulations. Then you will say, no, now you are talking about the National Legislative Assembly, and we are now in a national legislature.
Okay.
There are two houses coming mm-hmm. together. So here, what I want to say is this. As a parliament, we need to, when a bill is presented to the House, to complement what has been said by it, when the bill is also addressing the public interest, the bill also will be taken for public hearing. Where you invite the stakeholders to come and give their views in the bills
mm-hmm.
that is being presented.
Yeah.
And even also in the Constitution. When we are reviewing the Constitution, for example, people now are talking of permanent Constitution. What will happen now is that National Constitution Review Commission now will delegate people to the state to collect views, solicit views of the people. Yeah. What type of constitution that's going to govern them? The same thing also to the law, apply to the laws. When a law is presented to the House, now you have to take it for public hearing and invite all the stakeholders and people are of interest to come and give their views of how this bill will look like.
On the public hearing,
I just want to make it very clear for our listeners also that the, you know, when we subject the bill for the public hearings, it's not necessary that the members of the committee should, you know, include everything that has been said in the public hearing.
Because
at the end, it is the decision of the members of parliament. Actually, the public hearing is... it's just, you know, to widen or to give more, you know, informations or to give more information to the members of the committee. But it's not binding on the members of the committee that they should take everything that we should have discussed in the in the public hearing. The last thing, you know, there is the issue of the bill. You know, sometimes our public, they look at the member, the parliament, they think that by passing so many bills, that means that the parliament is working, no? Because even sometimes the bill can even stay for 1 year or 2 years. Because the most important thing is you have to be very sure that the bill that you are passing, because there are stakeholders, you know, and if you pass a bill in a rush and that bill, you see there are shortcomings in the bill, that means there are also a group or, some of the stakeholders, they can be affected by that bill. So the most important thing to pass the bill is to scrutinize it properly. Even if it takes 1 year or 2 years, it's not necessary. But you must pass a bill that is perfect and is comprehensive.
A quick question. You have two houses. There's a debate. Which is the upper? Which is the lower?
You know, this is very interesting. You know, this is one of the controversial issues and also some of the people. Now we are adopting the Westminster system of governance, where now the two houses are, when there's a system of bicameral systems, the houses are named differently. For example, the Council of State in different countries is called Senate. Or it's called Upper House. And sometimes, in other, and then the other house is called the House of Representatives. So now if we come in, if we bring it to our context as South Sudanese, we can say that the National Assembly is representing the House of Representatives, because people are elected by the people. So they represent the will of the people. This is what the Constitution said. And the Council of State in this context also should be, either we call it a Senate or we call it a Upper House. Now, the issue of Upper House and Lower House, you know, people just literally interpreted it. When you are upper, that means you are higher than anybody else. And then when you said you are lower, you said you are lower. So now I can see even my colleagues in the National Legislative Assembly, when you say that you are a lower house, they don't accept it. But when you see people of members of the Council of States, sometimes they see that they are less imperial than the National Assembly. It was really for members, new members, it was very difficult for them to adjust to that situation, that all of us are representative of the people, and we represent the will of the people and South Sudan. So we are in the South Sudan. But roles are different. This is what make us different as a members. But these names, we did not adjust to it. Maybe when we go to the permanent constitution, this one now we are going to rename.
There should be a
to rename our houses.
A clear cut. Understanding, like, this is just one aspect we are speaking here, but it seems that without experience, you cannot survive under this system. The procedures and this, if you are still having water over your ears, it's still really difficult. Let me ask a quick question
Let me just add something on the, you see, on the which one is the upper and which one is the lower.
Mm.
You know, there is a practical reason for bicameral system or legislation.
Yeah.
Actually, bicameral means two houses or two bodies. That is the meaning of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is function as part of the larger system of check and balances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most important thing is, having two houses, you don't want one house to concentrate the powers in one house, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So now you divide, the powers between the two houses.
Mm-hmm.
And in India, I think the Council of State, that is the lower house in India, is the upper house. Yeah, though it is the Senate, but it is the upper house.
Mm.
But if you look at our constitution, that is Article 57, and you look at the powers and the functions of the National Legislative Assembly, and also you look at the competencies of the Council of States, you will see that most of the, that oversee the performance of the national government, approve the plans, programs, and policies, ratify international treaties, conventions, and agreements, adopt resolutions, vet and approve appointments as required by this constitution, and so forth. And when you look at the competencies of the Council of States, that is the Article 59,
mm-hmm.
to initiate legislation and then issues resolution and directs it, mostly is concentrated on the states. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So the competency of the Council of States is mostly dealing with issues and arises from the states.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the competence or the powers of the function of the National Legislative Assembly, the functions of the national government, all these powers are given to the National Legislative Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree totally with him that yes, we are now drafting our new permanent constitution, and these are the issues that also I think we should discuss it and we raise it.
Mm-hmm.
When you are writing a constitution, it's not necessary that we write a constitution based on what is happening in other constitutions, mm-hmm. but it is our practices. You see, mm-hmm. we learn from it, This is one of the things that, that we have shortcomings in this issue, but the powers between the two houses.
Yeah.
Then we address it in our constitution.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Still, you are listening to Democracy in Action with me, Gabriel Shadar. And with me in the studio are two members of Parliament, Honorable George Andrea Juma, the Deputy Chair of the Standing Committee of Legislation and Justice, and also Honorable Gatwij Lampoch. And also with me here is Civil Affairs Officer from UNMISS, Emmanuel Rescholl. And we are, Political Affairs Officer here. And, of course, we are discussing here the roles and responsibilities of the Parliament and members of Parliament in what they are doing in the government.
101 FM Radio Miraya, powered by the people, uniting the nation. Your preferred station, the voice of peace.
Yes, in the remaining minutes, we will be speaking about your role, relationship between with the government in the executive and the judiciary branch. Like we are saying, in a democracy or a modern state, you have three wings or three branches of government. That's the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. But sometimes we are not clear about the relationship and what governs that relationship between the executive and the judiciary. In South Sudan, many even on the street there, they say that, our parliament is just following the steps of the executive. Whatever the executive says, they will just go and follow. If the executive is not interested, they will just follow. They cannot twist the hand of the executive. The judiciary is there also not really clear what is the relationship between judiciary and sometimes we say MPs will come here and say, no, the law is still there with the judiciary, is still with the Ministry of Justice. The law has not reached us and we cannot go and take it from there. So this kind of thing, what is the relationship, Honorable Gatwich?
First of all, as it is stipulated in the constitution, the relationship between parliament and executive, that we have three organs of the government. One is the legislature, which is the higher authority of the land, if according to the constitution.
Mm.
We have the legislature, and then we have the executive, and the third organ is the judiciary. Our relationship with the executive is to check, is for check and balance. That is to oversee the executive and also bring the issue of accountability and transparency when they are doing their own works as a parliament. Mm-hmm. This is our relationship with the parliament. That's why when the bill is presented to the House, it has to be the executive presented to the House. And in that context, the Minister of Justice is not part of the judiciary. Mm-hmm. It's part of the executive, and which is, in other contexts, the Minister of Justice or any ministry is an advisor to the president or to the government in that particular portfolio. Mm-hmm. For example, the Minister of Justice is the advisor of the government and when it comes to the issues related to the laws. Mm-hmm. And also advisor of the president when it comes to the matters that related to the law. So this is how we related. When a bill is presented, that's why any institution in the government, يعني وزارة مثلا عنده قانون عايز يقدمه للبرلمان لازم يمشي من خلال
Minister of Justice.
Mm-hmm. So Minister of Justice now will present to the executive, that is to the Council of Ministers, and then from there it will be forwarded to the to the Parliament. Mm-hmm. This is, and then now the Parliament will take charge of the bills and then do whatever they want to do, and then until they pass it. They went through the process of what we have talked about, the four stages, and then pass it and then send it back to the particular institution.
Yeah.
And then not to that particular institution, it will be sent back to the Minister of Justice, said that they will now go
fine-tune it
and then now become a law and take it to the President for assent.
Yeah.
This is what, this is the relationship between the executive and the parliament. We are doing the oversight.
Yeah.
Now, when we come to the judiciary, which is the third arm of the government, the relationship also is the same way, that also we oversee the judiciary. When there's issues related to the judiciary, but though the judiciary, they are not actually doing dealing with the laws that we are, legislation.
Yeah, they are not. Yeah.
They are just doing the laws, the issue related to the courts and all these issues.
Yeah.
So, but because one of the component, one of the organ of the government is also has a relationship with the government. So our role as a member of parliament is to oversee the executive and also the judiciary.
Judiciary.
When these arise.
No. Any Dafa Saira or Honorable George?
Yes. I have an addition. I think. Yes, I agree that there is three arms of government. That is the legislation, and then executive, and then the judiciary. And three of them, they are not fighting each other. Of course, they are completing each other. Mm. And also, this is very important that there must be a cooperation between the three organs because we are doing the same thing. Mostly, our relationship with the executive is actually we oversee, you know, is our role is our oversight roles on the executive actually, on in terms of passing the laws and at the same time also the implementation of the budget. You see, when we pass the budget, also that budget must be implemented because also the budget is guided and is guided with the Appropriation Act, which we, when we are passing the budget, we pass it with it. Mm. I think with the judiciary. Yeah, we believe that, you know, judiciary is independent. The independence of the judiciary is there. But the independence of the judiciary is limited also. If we look at our constitution, that is Article 122 and 22.4, it talks about the judiciary shall have power to adjudicate on disputes and render the judgments in accordance with this constitution and the law. So now here you see it talking about education. That means there will be no any interference from us as members of parliament. You see, only on the adjudication of the disputes and the cases. Mm. But also, where do we come as parliament? We come, if you see Article 124, and that is 3. Article 124.3, the judiciary shall be self-accounting and its finances shall be subject to public audit. Okay. This is where we come as members of parliament.
Okay.
You know, we play our role in the oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have power to check the accounts of the judiciary because we believe that this is a public money. And this public money, we should know how is it spent by the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is why we had a kind of pulling of rope with the judiciary on the issue of accountability, checking their spendings.
Usually,
and the practice is always they should have an accounting officer, and they don't have an accounting officer. You know, previously they used to have a sitting judge who is in charge of the accounts, which is wrong. Because for us now, the issue of independence of the judiciary will just come. We cannot summon, you know, a justice or a judge to come to and appear before the House. If we do that, that means we are violating what has come in the Constitution. So here, we as members of Parliament, when there is an accounting officer, that accounting officer is answerable to us, then we can even call him. So this is our relationship with the judiciary. We don't interfere in their things, but when it comes to the issue of the accountability, this is where we as members of Parliament, we can come in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think we have been learning a lot. This is a whole semester in the university, or even some PhD studies and all this, but you have managed to give a very brief, just in that small part. Emmanuel, we have not forgotten you. Now, let's come to your relationship as UNMIS Political Affairs Office and your relationship with the with our MPs and the Parliament. What is that?
Thank you very much, Gabriel. You know, before I address your question, you early asked why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. I said people might be wondering.
Exactly. So in this, you know, in this program, which is intended to educate the members of the general public on the workings of our government and also, you know, how our, the South Sudan democracy is developing. I think the simple answer that I can give, and I think you earlier indicated that UNMIS is a major partner, you know, to the government in general and also to the Parliament as far as security and development, you know, are concerned. You know, for that matter, we in UNMIS, we do support the Parliament efforts in shaping the legal, political, and socio-economic landscape of the nation through the technical support, of course, that we provide. So now let me answer your question concerning the UNMIS relationship with Parliament, whether at the national level or at the state level. I would say, and I would like to actually affirm that we really enjoy a fantastic working relationship with Parliament at the level of the leadership and also at the level of MPs, you know, individually. And I think for that matter, that's why you can see you know, without even, although we respect all the protocol in place, but you know, we have this open door policy, you know, that we have adopted in our relationship with the Parliament, and that's why, you know, like if I want to ask any honourable member to come, you know, to or show like this democracy in action, I don't need to go through, you know, a lot of formalities. I just show up in their office, and you know, they have been very cooperative, and that's why we have, you know, the session of today. So I can go on and on, you know, to to give or to showcase how our relationship with the government and also with Parliament is great, but you know, in the interest of time, I would like to stop here.
Thank you very much, and I thank the Honourable George and Honourable Gatwich. You have been doing great in this discussion and even update educating our people, and this is something that we have been looking for ever since. We are approaching a lot of things, and we need our people to vote and know what they are voting for, like if they understand the procedure of Parliament, and somebody is aspiring to come to Parliament, they tell him, "Toh, what is there, Yahoo, you will not be able to." They step down. But if it is about, oh, let us send our man there or our representative as woman there, and then they will not be up to these games, these rules and regulations, then they will be the losers in the end. Thank you very much. And I deliberately did not mention where parties you belong to, because here in this program itself, this is, you are speaking in one voice,
you're right.
And this this is not a debate. You are educating the people, regardless of where you belong to in Parliament. I mean, in the political spectrum in the country. Thank you very much, Honourable.
But before you conclude, I can see that you are trying to conclude.
I've just 2 minutes.
Say, I think let me. Mm-hmm. I think it is very important to bring it to attention to our audience. Mm-hmm. The freedom of expression of Member of Parliament. Mm. As a Member of Parliament, the Constitution and the Conduct of Business give you right to express your views and opinion freely, because you are representing
the people.
The people.
Yes, thank you very
so
much.
So whatever is affecting the interests of the people, it is your right as a Member of Parliament to attack. Provide that, you should not be incriminated because of that opinion that you have expressed. Mm-hmm. Number two, but if you are caught red-handed, you are caught red-handed, you don't pretend that you are a Member of Parliament.
That
you have right. Mm-hmm. That freedom card has a limited.
Yeah.
You cannot even go and do anything simply because you are a Member of Parliament. When you are a Member of Parliament, what you should do is that you have to change everything. You have to even your socializations. Even the way where you eat and where you how you dress, mm-hmm. you have to look as a honorable. That's why, because you are honored by your people to represent them. So you have to look honorable and also behave honorably.
Thank you.
This is what we are expecting for any members of parliament.
Thank you. Even us in the media, we are also asked to behave because we are public
absolutely,
figures.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gatwick Lam. Thank you very much, Honorable George Andrea. Thanks very much, my colleague in the Political Affairs Division in UNMISS, Emmanuel Rastjol, for being here. Pleasure to have you. And that is the end of today's Democracy in Action with me, Gabriel Shadar. Next week, we'll have our colleague Sunny Martin back on the program. Thanks for listening.
Do you want to say a little?